Well, before I launch into this thing, I would like to give a thanks to the worship team who's pulled all this off. It's been amazing. We've just handled it like, like we're just a normal church. Who needs a pastor? I'm just kidding. But, you know, it's just been incredible. You guys have done a great job, so thank you for all you've done. And Kathy, too. I mean, I don't think we could. I hope you noticed those slides Kathy found.
I did.
Okay. Right. It was in the beginning. Okay. Where is she? 15 years ago, this past Saturday was, I called my lung transplant team. I'd been on a list for 3 years. I called them to tell them I was ready to go active. That means I would take a call. I'd been putting it off, but it had come down to eating or breathing. And Lauren and I knew that there's no way they'd call right away because you can wait a year after you go active. So Lauren flew to Florida to give a presentation at a conference on some boat. And they called me midday to say, no, I couldn't go active because I had a heart problem. So then they called me just as I was about to sit down with my folks to have a drink in front of the fire. They called to say, come on in. So that day I got lungs. That very day. So I'd like to just take a moment and say thank you to those of you who are donors. And to those of you who have actually taken part in giving someone you love's body to be used for transplants on probably what was the worst day of your life. So thank you for that. 7 years before that, my lungs started collapsing, leaving me breathless. I had a terminal disease. I learned in 5 to 7 years to live. I have a number of other things that have given me practice with illness. I've had lots of practice. I had a round of cancer, 1 year of which was absolutely horrendous. I thought I would die. I've had 3 years worth of pneumonia because I take drugs to suppress my immune system, daily IVs for 3 years. One of those treatments, I also thought it would kill me, but the doctor said, sorry, we don't have a choice. So I mean, I guess I had a choice, but anyway, I just kept going. So besides having all of these experiences myself, I worked for many years with hospice, and I've helped a lot of people pass on, and a lot of people just who are sick. So I've given a lot of thought to illness and try to figure out the meaning and what, why and what. So that's what you're going to get today, some of my figurings. So blessed are the poor in spirit. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. When you think about that, who on earth seeks to be poor in spirit? I mean, think about it. Do you know anybody who's trying to be poor in spirit? So I'm wondering if we could count all those people who are ill and in pain and depressed, along with those who need mercy and are persecuted and insulted in that group, in that basket of deplorables, which is what Richard Rohr jokingly calls them. So maybe we could put the folks who are sick into that pile. I'd like you to just take a look at this list. This is sort of what I think of as sort of the values we have in our culture. These are more the things that people strive for rather than poverty of spirit, I think. And these are the kind of things that people are, well, wait a minute, I'm going to go to the next slide before I get going. Look at how Kathy did that. Isn't that something? The other list is what you might experience when you're ill. Or if you're grieving. Or sometimes when you're aging. And so it doesn't necessarily feel like heaven, the kingdom of heaven, when you're ill. I guess that's the point I'm making. It can be lonely, humiliating, embarrassing. You feel hopeless and helpless. And worst of all, sometimes it's shameful. Some who are ill feel betrayed by their body, their gods, their community, some of whom may see them as not trying hard enough or not going deep enough, and that's why they're ill. It can be hard to hold your head up at times and even sometimes carry on conversations. I remember when I was first ill and people said, well, what are you doing with your day? And I thought, huh, well, the laundry, eating. So, and then consider what it's like when illness is hanging out in a home, which is a pretty normal place for illness to be, where one person is well and one is sick. It can be a challenge. So where is the blessedness? A while back, I had a surgery. You can see I'm still recovering for severe sciatic pain. When I woke, I learned I couldn't walk, and I was livid. I raged, I suppose, at God, only I just couldn't even believe there could be such a thing as God. How could that happen to me? I've had enough. I got in my hospital bed, I tried to burrow into the center and disappear. Fortunately for me, within a week, that darkness lifted. And what was interesting is it lifted off like a lead blanket. That's how it felt. You know those ones they use for x-rays? It lifted off and I could feel it lift off. And I chuckled and said, well, just what was it I was planning on doing with this next year, besides learning to walk? What brings about something like that? What brings about a blessed shift? What is the path from despair to hope? Here are some of the answers I've found. Oops, I didn't move the slide ahead. I have to remember to look up there. The first I'm just going to mention is basically loving ourselves enough to take care of ourselves. We can be mad at our body, but we still need to take care of ourselves. Do the things we love. Dance. Sing. Knit. You're not knitting today, Cindy. Spend time in nature. Watch TV, somebody just said. I'll take suggestions. And also, consider how much energy you've got. If you have this much, if you have 5 blocks of energy, and you have to spend 4 going to work, well, you better figure out how to fit everything else you have to do into that one. Yep. That's hard. And you might have friends and family who have this much. So it's you have to pay attention to that when you're ill. I find God in others. Spouses. I mean, I don't have one. But counselor is a caring person, but here's the magic thing, here's the best part, is someone who can listen in a way I call sacredly. Someone who can listen, who doesn't have a preconceived idea of what you should do. Who doesn't need to fix you. Who really can listen. And also be a listener, which means listen. You know, it's not necessarily easy to do that. We're not trained to do that. We don't really think about it. But a listener is an incredible thing. So be the stand-in for God. I have a friend who, when I said I had that shift, I have a friend who, just before it happened, laid hands on me. She's been doing some energy work studying. And I believe that she's learned to let the Spirit work through her. So she was indeed a stand-in for God. And so it was just a few hours after she did that, that energy lifted, that miracle happened. And speaking of miracles, I find the divine in miracles. Now, say when I first got diagnosed, sorry for this dry mouth. When I first got diagnosed, oh, I can walk, that's right. I wanted the miracle to be, you know, my lungs were magically okay rather than bad. So when I talk about miracles, I mean, don't expect miracles, but don't expect the miracle you're planning on or that you want. But see, just don't let yourself be blocked, because I find them now in just the littlest thing. Somebody says something and it just shifts my perspective and I feel better. Or a song on a radio, just be aware that there's miracles happening around you all the time. But if you're planning on just one, a big one, that may not be what you get. I had a miracle that happened when I was in the hospital this last time. I woke up, couldn't walk, and as I said, was livid. That night, in my sleep, dreaming, I dreamt I was in this game and I had to get out. And so I ripped all my tubes out, and then I walked around the room. And the next day, I couldn't walk again. So there it was, and, you know, I wish it had just lasted till the next day, but it didn't. But still, it was a miracle that told me I would be walking. I could. Some part of me knew how to do it. And then, the other thing I think that's important for me is I've learned to watch how my thinking. First of all, I can't compare. If I find myself thinking, well, so-and-so doesn't have this, and I have this. So you can't compare to someone else. You can't compare to what you used to have. That's the worst. And you can't compare to what you hope to have. It doesn't mean you can't work toward it, but don't compare, because that's a source of despair. Similarly, I need to avoid what I call dualistic thinking. So here's how mine went after that surgery. Darn, or worse, I said worse. I have to spend another year healing from something. I got to learn to walk. This is awful. This thing's good, and that thing's bad. It doesn't serve you to do that. Each thing is the next thing. One time I did last for almost a month holding non-dual thinking. I haven't done it since, but I know it can be done. I was in the emergency room, my lungs had collapsed. It was only a few years ago, I think. And I was in the emergency room, and I thought, oh, well, this is just the next thing we're doing. And sure enough, I went through the whole month of hospitalization, and it was fun. And I had a ton of pain. And it was a very difficult hospitalization. But it was, because I wasn't just thinking this is awful, it was a different kind of experience. And all of the professionals treated me like one of them. When they would come around and have the rounds, they just acted like I was part of the consult team. And I suspect that all the other times I've been hospitalized, that didn't happen, because I'm just in fear, you know, in the bed in fear about whatever's next. So that non-dual approach to just about everything, in particular to the things that are rough, has been incredibly helpful for me. I do think about thoughts sometimes with the image of Velcro in mind. So if of course I want to stick to my good thoughts, but sometimes I'll have a nasty thought, or nasty, I don't know, I'd say just something cruel even. It just, if you have a thought and it sticks and you can't shake it, it has you. You don't have it. So I like to think of it as a Velcro and just, you know, rip it off. And then to those readings that we had. Anyone who wants to save her life must lose it. Anyone who loses her life will find it. Or come into being as you pass away. This is the heart of the matter for me. Over the years, I've lost most of the things I used to define myself. I was a good nurse. I was a good wage earner. Well, not ideal, but good enough. Backcountry hiker, skier. I was a healthy person. And later, when I had cancer, I lost being a singer. I can sing, but you might not want to be right there with me. And recently, being able to walk well. I just keep losing things that I use to define myself. Loss after loss, until sometimes it feels like there's nothing left. But there is something. I think of it as the me that's always been there and always will be. The me that's really me and God. The divine. I drop into this place every once in a while that feels like it's the very ground of my being. A place that maybe a lot of my life has been lost, but one where I come back into being one with God. Maybe that's heaven. Many spiritual disciplines teach letting go, becoming nothing, becoming empty, as a gift, as a path to becoming who we truly are, who we're meant to be, a state of being open to blessedness. I don't know that I got there intentionally, I just sort of came in the back door. And that's what can happen with illness, or with other things that disappoint you. Don't get me wrong, because I scramble right back as fast as I can. I'm working hard to get my walking back. Still, I think of everything as sacred, even the suffering and the pain that we all share. Some of my worst times of pain, I reach out and know that I'm sharing with others. I feel for them, and my pain is less. So there's hope for those of us with illness and suffering. Not hope to return necessarily to who we were, but to carve down to our divine and eternal essence. And I want to end with this poem by Rumi, which, well, Do just listen, see what you think. This human being is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival, a joy, a depression, some meanness, some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your whole house empty of its furniture. Still, treat each guest honorably. He may be cleaning you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them all at the door laughing and invite them in. Be grateful for whoever comes because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. Amen. Thank you.